Hey, this is Amir. I play Aram on The Blacklist, and you are listening to The Blacklist Exposed.
The Blacklist summer hiatus rolls on, and we are back with another special edition of The Blacklist Exposed. Good day, special agents. I am Agent Troy Heinrichs. Here, going by myself this week, as I bring in three of you, the fans, to talk about how we felt about Season 4, what we expect to see in Season 5, and of course, how we can bring in some of the ideas from The Blacklist Redemption now that it has been canceled. Aaron is out having some vacation time, so we bring you this special episode as a thank you, of course, for all of you helping us get nominated in the 2017 Podcast Awards. To help us out, go to podcastawards.com, and at the very top of the page is a blue box. You click on that blue box, and that'll take you to a registration page where you just fill out your information. You'll get an email. Confirm your email. It's the only email you will get from the system. Just confirm you are who you are. That'll get you into a sign-in page so that you can then go ahead and fill out your nomination ballot. You only have to do this one time this year. You don't have to do multiple voting and things of that nature like last year. This year, just fill out one nomination ballot and make sure you choose in the entertainment category, The Blacklist Exposed. That's right. In the entertainment category, pick The Blacklist Exposed. In the TV and film category, if you can help out our other Golden Spiral Media show, Beyond Westworld, that would be fantastic. Again, that's TV and film, Beyond Westworld. We also have a few other shows that we'd like you to help out with, if you could. In the arts category, vote for The Resourceful Designer. Now, that's done by Mark Decote. He does a fantastic job on his podcast there, as well as a GSM host here on the network. And then also the Remake This Movie Right podcast with Aaron and myself from time to time. You can vote for that in the People's Choice category. And, of course, the Packers Fan podcast in the sports category that I do with my good friend Wayne Henderson, who is also on our Doctor Who podcast here on the Golden Spiral Media Network. So again, podcastawards.com. You have till the end of the month, but why don't you just go ahead and pause this episode right now, take care of that nomination, then come on back and hear the discussion we have with three of you, the fans, here on our second fan roundtable during the hiatus this summer. Sit back, relax, and enjoy, and thank you again for nominating us in the Podcast Awards, podcastawards.com, The Blacklist Exposed in the entertainment category. Well, we promised some special episodes in July, and I am very pleased to have some awesome Blacklist fandom people here with us this Saturday as we do more Podcast Award episodes. Joining us today, we have Evie, Tessa, and Jen, all from the Blacklist community. You've probably seen them on Tumblr. You might even heard a few of these ladies on the Keen Minds podcast, if you wanted to check that out. And we're going to have a little discussion here around Season 4, you know, the things we love, the things we didn't love. We're going to talk a little bit about the return of Tom, how we feel, how that is going to influence Season 5. We'll talk a little bit about Redemption as well, since I believe most of us are Redemption fans in this group, and how we feel about the loss of that show and what things we might want to see come up on Season 5 to work those stories back in, or at least some of the characters for sure. And then we'll just kind of talk a little bit through who are our favorite character arcs during the course of Season 4 and where they might be going in Season 5 as well. So with that, I'll go around the horn just to let the ladies introduce themselves. Evie, tell us who you are and what you do and where we can find you on the internet.
Hi, I'm Evie. I'm also known as Blacklister214 on Tumblr. I am a theorist and a Keen 2 shipper, and I just like to get on Tumblr and chat out my obsession with the show. So, hi, everybody.
I am Tessa. I run a Tumblr blog called Criminally Sane, and I have with Jen Keen Minds podcast. And I am a theorist. I'm not a super. All I am obsessed with is finding out what is the truth in The Blacklist.
And hi, I'm Jen. I'm also known as Dakota Saiko over on Tumblr and fanfiction.net and Twitter. And I run a blog over on Tumblr and write quite a bit of fan fiction. I'm a character development fan and also a shipper.
Fantastic. All right. So we got shippers. We got Keen 2. I feel like I should get a cage and set it up here, get a little, you know, WWF style going. Hopefully everybody will be nice and play nice together. Right, guys?
Of course.
All right. Well, let's do the easy one first. Tessa, tell me your thoughts. We finished season 4. We're kind of in the summer doldrums. And we got the news, of course, that Blacklist is going to be pushed back a week from its original start there late September. So we're not getting Blacklist till October. How did you think season 4 went for you? What were your high points? And then we'll talk about low points as well.
It was a very, very strong season. For me, the Blacklist just keeps getting better, which is pretty hard to do because when it started, I was so hooked because of the quality of the show. It's a movie they present to you every single week that they're on. Just 22 movies that you're watching. The cast, to me, is terrific. And in general, the mind of the creators and the writers that write this is unbelievable. And as I've gone further and further, I've discovered more a secret language, if you wish, a symbol kind of language that is going through that have helped me go through clues. I thought it was a terrific, terrific season, a tremendous character growth. We got a lot of action. And I know that a lot of people wasn't crazy about the Kirk arc. I loved it particularly. And I think that we haven't seen the last of all of those.
John, how about you?
Oh, I loved it. I felt like it was a roller coaster, just absolutely nonstop through the entire season. Looking back on it, you see how everything's tying together. You see all the loose ends, not all of them quite yet, but so many of those loose ends coming back together. They're pulling from pieces that, quite honestly, some of us had thought they were, you know, had forgotten by the writers, and they're pulling on those and they're bringing them back together and they're tying them in. And it really is. It was such a great season moving forward. And I have a lot of high hopes for season 5 because of season 4.
Why is that specifically?
We just saw the family dynamic that has been a thread through the entire series. I personally, in season 3, I was very hesitant on the Agnes arc. I thought it went through season 4 spectacularly. They just used it to really build some of the family themes that they've used and the idea moving forward on sorry, I'm getting a little tongue-tied tonight. Just the family things moving forward between Liz and her daughter and all the things that she went through as a child and looking towards trying to protect her.
A lot of people were saying that first half of season 4 was literally written to get Tom to the spinoff. And Tom maybe have got a little bit more screen time than he probably would have normally had the spinoff not been there.
I think it was the way that it was very natural, in my opinion, that it was written to sort of the natural evolution of wrapping up that arc and getting Tom and Liz to a place where that he could go off to the spinoff. But I think that's kind of where they were as a relationship. And mythology wise, I think it really opens things up having him go off to do his own thing because he clearly has such a mysterious, Tom also has this clearly such a mysterious backstory, and there's so much more mythology, and we're on, at least I do, I love the mythology. It's my favorite part of the Blacklist, so I thought that was fantastic, which was why I love the season so much. Requiem might be my second favorite Blacklist episode ever, coming second only to Cape May. Like Tessa and Jen have both said, there were so many threads that have been just sort of coming together and clarifying in my mind. And I think without Requiem, I really would have had a hard time understanding where they were going in the second half of the season with Kaplan. It just, her losing it and then just going against Red was something I had a really hard time wrapping my mind around. But I should have just had faith in the writers because they knew what they were doing. They had a plan and it was beautiful. So that was fantastic, in my opinion.
So let's talk about Kaplan then. During the course of the season, she, you know, obviously gets shot. We know that was probably expected given the events of what happened to Mr. Gray, Mr. Newton Phillips from season 1. So we have that continuity from the writers where if you cross Red, if you don't come to Red, death is around the corner for you. Was it shocking at all that Kaplan survived that gunshot, or was that what you expected to see potentially, Jen?
Well, I went back and forth right up until the moment where he pulled the trigger on if he was actually going to do it or not, because the Blacklist has a habit of painting a path for you and then taking a sudden divergent right at the end to, you know, to take a different path. And so sometimes they do that, and then sometimes you predict it. It just depends on the situation. So I went back and forth right up until he pulled the trigger. And I remember sitting on my couch watching the episode and screaming when he did. Her coming back, it was interesting. I'll put it that way. It ended up opening a lot of growth for Rhett that I was very excited for, because he made what he considered a mistake and what, well, personally as a viewer, I considered a mistake. And it allowed him to grow in that and to take what he felt and gave him a second chance at that he doesn't always have. And I thought that was very beautiful in the way that went.
And the second chances is something that we kind of got in the harem episode. We had obviously the lovely lady from MI6 that was involved with Red, and Red actually had that precedent. Well, if you just would have come to me, I could have helped you get out, right? You're not tied to me forever. We obviously have the hanging chad of what's in the shoebox that Red gave Dembe. But do you think that if Kaplan would have approached him instead of having this all out war, would Red have actually let her live, knowing that she was still alive? Anybody could take that one.
I don't know that he would have done that. I think that Red, you know, like with Anslow Garrick, with Luther Braxton, and with all these other people that we know, like Philip Newton, he basically submitted to be killed. He knew that he had committed treason, and in doing so, but he did it because of his family. They all do it because of love, some sort of love. I was absolutely not surprised that he shot Kaplan. To me, that was I saw that coming so far out. I knew that she was going to do something like that. I knew that she had been the one doing that fake death. I knew it was a fake death. I knew it was being the one doing it. And I knew that she was going to get a bullet to the head. And I was not surprised. I was perfectly on board with that. And I even understood Red. Coming back, I don't know that I would. I don't know that there was a choice at them. I think at that point, they were both on such a collision course that there was no way to stop in that train. Kaplan was hell-bent on destroying Red. And I think it all had to do with Agnes, with saving Agnes. And at that point, I mean, if you really think about it, Kate Kaplan was willing to send Liz to prison. That's a very strange way of caring for someone.
But it does keep her safe.
Yeah. In prison.
The guy who was burned in prison doesn't agree with you.
Yeah. unlike Tessa and Jen, I really, up until the last minute that he did it, I didn't think that Red was really going to pull the trigger. I thought he was going to exile her to that little plot of paradise, because I thought that was a much more reasonable reaction. And yes, Red does react violently to betrayal like Newton Phillips and Nico and Vargas. But there are circumstances when he's been betrayed or people have put Liz in incredibly dangerous situations and they've been allowed to live. So Tom obviously betrayed Red when he took the contract, but okay, Tom gets a pass because Liz loves him. When Wrestler arrests Liz, she almost dies because he makes that choice, and Wrestler's obviously spared. But my best example, because this is somebody who betrayed Red and put Liz in jeopardy, is Madeline Pratt. In season one, Madeline Pratt betrays Red and Liz at the embassy and puts Liz in jeopardy, and she's allowed to survive the experience and in time comes to betray him again. So maybe he just learned his lesson. But I really thought, because Kaplan was motivated by trying to follow that objective number one, which is keep Elizabeth safe, because that was her ultimate priority and that's Red's ultimate priority, he was going to show some mercy, put her into exile, send her away, but not kill her. So I really had a hard time with that when I first saw the episode, but two things redeem it for me. One, the fact that he misses, which Red shooting somebody, Red's an incredible shot. We've seen him take out like six guys by himself with a handgun. The fact that he misses enough for her to survive tells me that at least some part of him knew that what he was doing was wrong as he was doing it. And number two, the place that he's in, the emotionally, psychologically, explains it a lot better to me. I don't think I would have accepted it from season one or season two Red, but a Red who has just experienced the grief of losing Liz, actually thinking she was dead for a long period of time, and then realizing she betrayed him, he is very messed up in the head. So I can more easily accept that he makes that choice. And I am super glad that at the end he realizes, at the end of the season, he recognizes that he made a mistake and he shouldn't have done that. So I'm pretty much okay with it.
The question, though, is, and we've been racking our brains around this, did he actually miss? Or was it the metal plate in her head that saved her life?
I personally believe that it was an unintentional miss, that it was a subconscious sort of miss, that much like Evie was just saying, that it was something that he knew it was wrong on at least a subconscious level, and that's why he missed it. That's personally, when I watch the scene, when I watch the rest of season four, that's what I come away with it.
Yeah. I think just based, I don't think it hit the plate because the plate is up in her skull and she's got that cut, that fresh, like, bullet line across her cheek, which they showed us. And since there was only one shot, I think that's where the shot went. It would have had to have been higher for it to have bounced off the plate. But they showed us that long cut across her cheek, which I think is where the thing tripped by. So I'm with Jen. Subconscious, not that he actually thought at the time that he was leaving her that she was still alive, but subconsciously he missed. And he survived.
I think that because the shot on the cheek is basically almost the same shot that he missed with Anselo Garrick, that there is something, and I have a feeling that he was actually pretty close to Anselo Garrick, that that's where he tends to shoot people when he's really angry, and he missed. I think he just simply missed, and there's a part of him that wishes he hadn't done it. He's not perfect.
He is not, that is for sure. Yeah,
they've made that clear over the seasons.
I always thought that the bullet, like, winged by her cheek, giving her the scar, but he was always aiming for her head. But then, like you said, still subconsciously, he knew that there was a metal plate in her head, and that's why he aimed there in particular, was to just knock her out, but not actually kill her. So I'm kind of a mix. Like, he intended to shoot there specifically, but that's why he shot there specifically, because he didn't want to kill her. But he could still say that, hey, I will pull the trigger no matter what, so I can keep my empire intact. Like, I don't want to look like I'm going soft or anything.
Well, I do believe that there's something to be said about the world that Reddington functions in, that it does look like he's going soft if he lets people get away with things. And to release that control that he has, it's one of the reasons he is so controlling over things. If he releases that control, that puts him in a very bad position with the kind of people he does deals with on a daily basis. I mean, yes, Reddington is he's an anti-hero, is what most people, I think, would consider him in this storyline. But he deals with some very, very terrible people, and they only answer to strength on his end. And so if he just lets people go because he has a sentimental attachment to them, he appears to be doing that. That looks like weakness to a lot of the people that would have otherwise been his allies and could potentially cause a lot of trouble within that empire. And so a showing of strength in not allowing that control to slip is something that's almost a necessity for him in the world that he functions in regularly.
I think that was also very clear in with Magnus Baldursson, that, you know, he's like, you have to kill me or I have to kill you. And Red has a beautiful speech about truth and what it matters and what it doesn't. But I think that you guys have touched on something very interesting, which is Emma. Emma is allowed to live, which is one of a few indications that I have, and is one of theory of mine, that Emma is actually Jennifer. And the reason she lives is because she's family.
Oh, that's interesting. I never would have put... Yeah, that's really, really good. I like that idea.
It's she uses two sets of words, one taken from Carla and one taken from Red. She uses that expression, muddle through. And if you remember Wu Jing, Red says, we'll muddle through on our own. And then she also uses that center of the universe that comes from Carla. And you know, when you're a child, when you get used to those things that your parents say all the time, and you tend to use them as you get to be an adult. And I think that to me, there was that one little thing. And there is a blonde with a ponytail. There is, you know, it's a blonde with a ponytail that Red lets live, even though she actually almost got this killed. And he also surrendered to MI6 and wanted to speak to her only.
Very true. Good observation. Like it. I like it.
Thank you.
There was also the Annie angle, Annie Heisey's character, Janet Elise, that they thought she might be Jennifer too, so who knows?
She's a little young.
What do other people think? Do you think that Emma could potentially be Jennifer?
I'm much more inclined to believe Emma's Jennifer than Janet. I very much enjoyed Janet's character. I just went at her with the opinion that she was going to get Aram to the place he needed to be with Samar. That's how I read her character. That's how I viewed her character. Though I really liked her. I'm kind of sad that she's gone now. I assume she's gone for good. But I do not personally see her as a potential candidate for Jennifer. I could be wrong in that, obviously. I would much more be inclined to think that Emma is a more likely candidate for Jennifer, just age-wise and in the situation and the way that Red reacted to her, much like Tessa said.
I agree in that Emma's a more likely candidate than Janet, but I don't think that Emma is Jennifer, just because she was working for British intelligence and she's got that. I mean, I guess she could have really, really impressive back paper that proves she's a British national, but I don't think so. And there was also that scene in season two where Red's asking where Jennifer is. He's asking Carla, saying, I can protect her. And he's been in this relationship with Emma for longer than he's been in the relationship with Liz. So that could just be me. But I do like the theory, because there is a lot of familiarity between the two characters, and certainly paralleling and physically, I could absolutely buy her as the grown up version of the little girl with the bubbles.
And why would she be the only one that gets to escape Red's clutches?
Well, my theory is the reason he lets Jennifer off, and I could be totally wrong, to go live her life and live, you know, in secret, is because his presence is a danger, but he justifies it in Liz's life because from her mother's side, she's also getting this. She also has all of these overhanging threats. Liz was always in a lot more danger from outside influences, not just him. Versus Jennifer, who doesn't have this whole fulcrum problem in her background, who doesn't have Katerina Rostova as her mother. She doesn't have all these other dangers that are automatically coming for her. So, in my opinion, Jennifer can leave. Jennifer is left alone. Not because he doesn't want to see her or because he doesn't love her, but because in Jennifer's, he's the most dangerous thing in Jennifer's orbit. By making contact with her, he'd be putting her in greater jeopardy. Versus Liz is already in jeopardy, so he's balancing it out.
I like it. Any counter thoughts to that, Tessa or Jen?
Yes, I do think that absolutely. Blacklister, Eve is 100% right, is that Jennifer was more protected because she was the daughter of Carla. However, I do have a sort of crazy theory. I know that you like the mom theory. My crazy theory is that Carla is Katerina. So in that regards, Jennifer was safer because she was associated with the identity of Carla. Well, what Liz was associated with the identity of Katerina.
Well, that would be like a nice wool pull over your eyes, because it does say that you look so different. And then she comes back with not as different as you.
Yeah, so, and she punches him.
Yeah, that would be interesting if she was there hiding in plain sight the whole time. That would be a nice. That'd be a good switchover. I don't buy it, but it would be a good switchover.
Yeah.
So, going back to Kaplan, then, so we get to the end of the season. What did you think of the resolution to the war? Did you expect her to take the swan dive off the bridge? Like, how did you guys envision it ending? And then, was it satisfactory for you when it actually did come to an end?
I think for me, it broke my heart in many different ways. I was very conflicted by the end of the finale. Because I've always been a big Kate Kaplan fan. She was a fascinating character. Red, the nickname Red's Army, you know, all of those characters that have been close to him are always fascinating, quirky characters. And Kate is very much so. She's very good at her job. I love the fact that at the beginning of season 4, Red tells her that that she needs to know her place and that the cleaner isn't a strategist, and yet she's the one that undoes his entire empire by the end of it. She does turn out to be quite the strategist by the end of the season. And I've always loved her for the ways that she comes at things, but she also destroyed so much in this supposed path to save Liz and Agnes. She nearly destroyed Wrestler's career. She killed Baz, apparently. I can get over putting various people like Marvin into prison where they can come back very easily, but there's no coming back from death. Let's talk to Liz. But typically there's no coming back from death. But in the end, I didn't feel like there was any real resolution in which they could coexist. And so killing her, so I guess I'm left with the biggest question of what do those bones mean, and what could they mean that it would require her to kill herself to make sure that Liz got to them?
Well, I think it's a parallelism too to the fulcrum, because that was the whole concept was, the fulcrum's keeping me alive, and if Red dies, the fulcrum comes out and exposes the Cabal's secrets and blah, 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 blah. So I think with this, it was very similar in that if Kaplan were to die, then there was a protocol for the suitcase to make its appearance, because the only way she was dying was if it was at some behest of Red, because Red would always protect her, potentially. I don't think it was like a permanent thing, like if she ended up getting killed in the line of duty or whatever, then the suitcase would still be a secret, but given this, it was like her only out, that if I die, the suitcase comes out, and she just made it so that she went on her own terms, which I thought was fascinating.
Oh, I agree with that. I just don't think that moving forward, that Red and Kate could have coexisted after everything that happened, even if Red made the correct choice and did not want to hurt her again. So I think Red made the correct choice, and Kate made the only choice she felt like she had left.
How about that? What about you, Evie?
Kaplan went too dark to go. I was really happy, first of all, that Red wasn't the one to kill her. That was my prayer as we're going into the finale. I didn't want it to be Red, because it's really messed him up, and I didn't want that to end with Red being the one to kill her. So they answered my prayer on that one. They also kept having her, I wasn't surprised that she ended up dying, because they kept having her with those headaches, and I kept thinking that that was going to be something, like she was going to have like 3 months left to live anyway, which they didn't end up doing, but I very much got the sense that we were really reaching the end of the line with Kaplan. And she did so many things, as they were saying, she messed up Wrestler, she had Wrestler brainwashed, she was going to send Liz to jail, that woman that she hired there, the Natalie Luca, possibly, and she killed the wife of that associate of Red's. I mean, there was a big, like, civilian collateral damage trail behind her, and I don't think that she was coming back from the... I didn't think that she'd end up coming back from the edge. It would have been my hope, because I too loved Kaplan, but I kind of felt that she was going to die. As for seeing whether she was going to jump off the bridge, I should have seen it coming when they stopped on the bridge and had the standoff, but I confess I was somewhat surprised initially. But yeah, I'm not surprised it ended with her death. As far as the suitcase was concerned, I think there probably could have been a better way of delivering the information than that random body of bones, but it was dramatic and interesting, and I'm looking forward to figuring out what's inside the suitcase like everyone else. So
nobody can ever just tell Liz the truth straight out. They have to give her clues.
But if you really look at Liz in the way she reacted things, I would say, sure. I mean, she had a pregnancy test and she threw it out without taking it. She took the glass and got a paternity test and threw it out without reading it. I gotta say, I get the point.
I think Liz is ready to know things when she's ready to know things and not 1 second before. I think that's the impression that I get with her. She's willfully ignorant up until the point where she chooses not to be.
And then yet still may be ignorant.
It's true. Yeah.
you threw away the one test that you had full control over. Therefore, that's the one you should have read.
Well, but I for a long time, you know, that I struggle thinking, does she know? And it's just pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. But then I settled for more or less what it was. She suspects it. She's just not ready to know that the devil is her father. And that means what it means for her sweet little Agnes, because Agnes has it on both sides. I was not surprised when she jumped. I wasn't expecting it, but I wasn't surprised. I thought that Kate has gone, and I loved her. I loved her more as a character the darker she got, because as I rewatched some of the earlier scenes, I thought there is no way that this woman kept all these nice tight little bodies that she didn't even have to go digging in the winter. They were just stored nicely in hotel rooms. So I thought Kate Kaplan had always this thing sort of planned. She forgot that one of the conditions of her employment was that she wasn't supposed to love Liz. And I think that the reason that strange request was made is because few things are more dangerous than love without full knowledge. And I think that that's what she really went off the dark side, because it was all about loving somebody when you don't have all the information. I don't think that even Kate knew that Red is her father.
Well, then, Tessa, I want to ask you the question. There's this exchange. She says, "You're my father. You lied to me the whole time." But Red never confirms or says anything. And then there's this exchange with him and Dembe about the, you know, did you deny it? And Red doesn't answer again. He's like, "No, I didn't deny it." So is this Red is letting her believe that Red is the father, or is Red actually the father? Where do you stand after that exchange happened?
I've always been on the bandwagon that Red is her father. The only thing I didn't know about after 101 was is he the biological father, a stepfather, an adopted father, a paternal figure? That was my only question. I have no doubt whatsoever that he is her father, her biological father, because we've had clues. You know, that's my girl. I didn't want you to be like me. Something that you wouldn't say even to a child that you haven't seen since he was four. You would say it to a child that lived with you, but you wouldn't unless it's related and you're talking about genetics. So I am fully 100% convinced that is a real DNA test, that Red is Red. I'm not saying that he was always Raymond Reddington, but since he went into the Naval Academy, he was Raymond Reddington. So I'm 100% on board that. Now the whole thing with a bag of bones and what Denver says, Liz will never be able to read it. To me, that has nothing to do with the paternity test. To me, that is something that Red did to Katerina that Liz will find unforgivable. And if you think about the things that Liz have found unforgivable, it is simply to keep her mother away. She forgave Red for killing Sam, for guarding Tom, for telling her lies, except the one thing that she thought, I can't forgive you that because my mother is alive and is looking for me. So if you think about it, the one thing that Liz will never be ready to learn is that Red kept her mother from her.
I could buy that. But then you have Jen on the other side. Did you turn your shipper card in and are now bought into this whole thing? Or are you saying, no, this is totally Red being Red and letting her believe that he might be her father, just so that way it throws her off from the real truth that we now have to track down in this suitcase of bones that's floating out there that is actually more detrimental to the cause?
Oh, I think, yeah.
Sorry, which Jen?
Jen.
I've been a daddy gator since the second episode in. The moment that they sat down in that Canadian restaurant, he said, "Well, fine, you can be my daughter." The wheel started turning and I went, "Really? Okay, that's possible." And I started to look for clues. And as the series built, I feel like they've been giving us clues towards a paternal sort of relationship between, you know, Red and Liz. And that's always been my thing. That's I've never seen anything to really disprove that. And kind of like Tessa, I've never been fully on the biological bandwagon. I've gone back and forth with, is he biologically her father? Is he just a father figure? Regardless of the situation, because we do have so many moments in The Blacklist in which we see that family isn't necessarily built by blood. And that's one of the things I love about The Blacklist, is that blood ties do not necessarily make family. Family's where you find it. And so I would be okay either way with Reddington, if he's biologically her father or otherwise. As of right now, I'm accepting it as canon. Personally, I'm accepting it as canon that he's her biological father, unless I'm given evidence to disprove that.
Agree, Evie?
Yep. 100%. So from the first season, like Jen, I was going back and forth on biology, but not on type of relationship. I think it was the episode in which I think it was General Ludd, when Red goes to Sam's bedside and he says, you know, I want you to know you will always be her father, Sam. I can only love her and protect her as you have. So to me, that was pretty clearly stating this is obviously the type of relationship that I feel for her, a relationship similar to the one that you had with Liz. And I'm not going to, he's kind of reassuring Sam that he's not going to usurp Sam's place. To me, that tells me that Red's got a pretty strong prior claim that would make that be a question in Sam's mind. I mean, Sam has raised Liz since she was very young. So for Red to feel the need to reassure him, no, I'm not going to take your place. That tells me that Red was obviously a father figure at some point in her life, biological or otherwise. But in terms of right now, in terms of our confirmation, you know, as we collect the clues over the course of the seasons, make notes about the certain things that we know about Liz's father. He was in foreign intelligence. He was the person who kidnapped her. And following along with what we learned with Kirk in the first half of the season, when Kirk says, Raymond was the one who kidnapped you. We know that Liz shot her father in the fire. Kirk doesn't know anything about the fire. So from that first half of the season, I was feeling pretty confident that we were finally going to get an answer and it was going to be Red. In terms of that final DNA test, I think at this point, with Red being totally depleted with his resources, there's no way he's able to intercept that test. I mean, when Red's at his full power, Red can pretty much do anything. But he's like burning passports in his hotel room. He's broke. He doesn't realize the test is being run unless he's having Cooper followed, which, again, at this point is unlikely. So I'm saying yes, absolutely, Red is her biological father. And the only reason that Denbe feels it necessary to ask the question, did you deny it, is because Red's been avoiding that truth for a very, very, very long time. So it's a reasonable question for Denbe to ask if he would outright just lie to her versus what he's been doing, which has been kind of careful obscuring of the truth and using metaphorical, I haven't really deserved the title of your father in so long, so it's not really lying, Red speak.
Let's be clear, though. Red's not broke. He's only illiquid.
I loved that phrasing.
I mean, if you put all of it together, it does make so much sense, right? You have Sam, like, yeah, I can only hope to be the father you were, and all this other conversation. So, yeah, he clearly says, Sam is the father. I might just be the biological donor at this point. And then you have the burns on the back, which would line up with she shot her biological father. And that's why the burns were on the back, because he was actually down in the fire charring to death, and why he needed the plastic surgery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it all makes sense that biological father is Red and parental upbringing made you who you are today father is Sam in that regard. But at the same time, it does seem interesting that there happened to be this other DNA test that just happened to get thrown away. And then this could be the writers again, just trying to draw people away from the actual truth and make us keep talking about it over and over and over again. But it was there, right? There was this other DNA test, and it took a 30-year-old DNA test to prove whether or not this was actually tied to Liz. But we still don't have any DNA samples from the actual Raymond Reddington standing in front of us today. And the fact that they actually did an imposter episode with, oh my gosh, I'm totally going to forget the guy's name now.
Gregory DeVry,
thank you. There's still stuff in there that makes you go, I don't want to believe it 100% because it can't be that simple, because if it's that simple, it almost feels like the wool was pulled over your eyes, and it kind of, I don't know if it makes you feel a little more about the show, because that was the answer from the beginning, and you kind of feel duped a little bit, but I don't know.
See, I've heard people say things like that, and while I understand it to a degree, I also feel like there's a different outlook that people in fandom have. We pick apart things, we dissect it, we put it back together, and then we dissect it again and put it back together again, trying to find all those little pieces of the puzzle. And when it comes down to it, we have a very detailed view of it. And so is it just that we read it correctly, or is it that it was obvious? It's hard to tell when you're deep in the fandom.
Yeah, I was having that conversation about Game of Thrones with somebody the other day, because I just literally finished watching all 60 episodes in a 3-week span, and I must be crazy, but I wanted to get caught up with the rest of the world, and I'm sitting there as I'm watching it, it's like everything to me seemed like it was a very logical conclusion of where everything landed, and nothing was a shock or a surprise. But yet everybody, when they were watching it live for the first time, they're all like, oh my gosh, the Red Wedding, and oh my gosh, this, and oh my gosh, that. And to me, it seemed like it was very well written to where a logical conclusion would have gone. So why is it that we can't assume that logical conclusion with the Blacklist?
You'll also have different people that are, like Tessa has talked about, that she grew up reading the genre. You have people that are more inclined to the spy genre, or more inclined to the, you know, various genres and various ways of writing that these writers go at it. Or, you know, with Game of Thrones that you were just saying, people that have read the books that know we were coming beforehand, or that are, you know, big in the fantasy world. And so people that are more inclined to think on the level that the writers are writing at and in that genre. And so they're going to be more inclined to read it correctly. They won't always read it correctly, but they may be more inclined to read it correctly. If that makes sense.
I also think that you did touch on something very, very interesting, which is you binge watch all 60 episodes. And I've noticed that a lot of the things that the Blacklist does to obscure a truth that actually might be very simple is to change the order in which it gives you the information. So it will give you first an information that at the time means nothing, but it will be a future misdirect. And when they present you the real information, you tend to dismiss it because you already were given the first information that throws you in the wrong direction. And it's first is best bias. And thus, let's say that you would think, you will hear that, Carla and Jennifer are fine. And then you will see him with the little ballerina, you would think, oh, he misses his daughter. But because you were presented with a little ballerina and he's presenting the head of Tanita to Wrestler, you're already being thrown in one direction. And then once you've been shown a clue, you tend to dismiss it. Oh, no, that's not a real family. They're not married. That's a cover wife and all sort of other explanations for something that is actually pretty simple.
And
when you do the rewatches, that's where I started. When you do the rewatches and you binge watch, that becomes very apparent.
What is the apparent thing that you're seeing?
It's easier to find the threads when you're binge watching it back to back to back versus when you're waiting a week and then 3 to 4 months in between the longest hiatuses.
Correct.
You tend to lose some of those details that you might have gained, some of the parallels that you see, some of the different threads tied together when you binge watch everything back to back. I personally, at the end of season 3, I think it was, I went back and did a massive rewatch of all of them. And I had been complaining the entire season about all these retcons and missing threads and that the writers just weren't getting their continuity right. And I was so frustrated, so frustrated. And then I went back and did a full rewatch of the entire show and went, I was wrong. They know exactly what they're doing. We just don't have all the pieces of the puzzle yet. We just don't know what we don't know. And these threads are, as we continue on, they're being tied together. And I have a feeling that once we get to the end of the show, if each person goes back and does an entire rewatch, so many things that we think we're missing would become so much more apparent after the full binge watch rewatch.
Well, hindsight's always 20/20. So, I mean, it'll be easy to pick it up once we have the actual answer, right?
I agree with both Tessa and Jen. I think part of the problem with getting all these little snippets spaced out over such a long period of time is that you start coming up with your own explanations as to how they're connected to such a point where you're thinking that your thoughts and your theories are actually what's been presented. So you have this as in your mind as being set canon when in fact you just made a guess and you're just holding on to that guess very stubbornly.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Never done that myself.
I definitely had to let go of some very firm Tom Keen backstory headcanons that I had when Redemption aired. I have a list out on Tumblr of things that I was determined were true and that Redemption just blew out of the water for me. I went, okay, good to know now.
I had to let go of Sam being a diplomat. I was so sure of it. It just blew my mind when I said, what do you mean? He's a grifter? Really?
With Sam, I thought criminal, but I thought smuggler. So I was close enough where I still kind of patted myself on the back a little. I'm like, definitely a shady CI that he met, you know, while doing sneaky naval intelligence stuff. And that's why they can't figure out what the connection is between Reddington and Sam.
That's where pirates go to hide. They go to the farthest place from water in the middle of Nebraska.
Yeah, they do. I was like, it's his hometown. He like returned. He had like a seedy life, smuggling illegal goods in and out of a DC area, and that's how Reddington got Katarine into the country. Or they were like arms dealers that they went after. Or I had so many. Or that's how they were smuggling sleeper spies in through Sam, and then he worked with them. I had crazy theories. Grifter is simpler.
Well, Karakurt did get in the country. You never know. Could have been part of the old network.
Exactly. He could be a grifter slash smuggler. He could be one of those hyphens. I mean, that's just going to be discovered.
Hey, if you're going to do something illegal, just might as well just keep going.
Exactly. Well, different things, see what fits.
Well, speaking of illegal or legal, depending on how you want to look at gray matters, we had the Redemption season this year, and it did move Tom Keen off the main show over to Redemption. What were our thoughts overall on Redemption? Let's go ahead and start with... Oh, Tessa, why don't you go?
I love Redemption. Redemption is, you know, I love The Blacklist because of the complexity, but if I have to pick a kind of show that I would just love to watch, it would be Redemption. It was sexy, it was fun, it was fast.
Whoa. We gotta be careful on the sexy here. I mean, it is his mom.
No. The show was sexy. The show, it was just like, you know, it was that spy and they were in, like, Dumont and will come up with all these crazy things. And then we have Solomon. And I'm sorry, but whenever you put Eddie Gathegi, that becomes sexy to me. I do confess to a little fangirling over there. The guy is just beautiful and he's a terrific actor. It was just a great, great show. All this, the things they pulled together, and it was just great. And I love the family dynamic that they had in that little family over there at Alcyon. And I particularly loved Howard. Howard and Tom together were absolutely terrific. And Howard and Scotty were off the charts for me. I'm just waiting for the family, for the first family reunion. That Thanksgiving is going to be precious. Leave the weapons at the door. Don't try to kill each other. You know, the family that occasionally may try to kill one another. I loved it. It was an absolutely great experience. I love to have Tom be the focus of the show. And I will certainly going to miss Redemption a lot.
How about you, Jen?
Well, my weakness, one of my many fandom weaknesses, is a very complicated, very upended father-son relationship. We were talking about before we started recording that I'm a Fringe fan. And when Redemption came on the horizon, it was very much focused on Scotty and Tom and the mother-son relationship there. And then Howard appeared. And I just remember watching the television screen and going, and I'm done. I'm all in. They just won me over for this. Whatever happens from here on out, I've been won over. And I loved it. It started a little slow for me. It was good, but I felt like it took a couple of episodes to catch its footing. But once it did, it hit the ground running. And it just, there was so much interesting mythology that as a Tom Keen fan, I really had decided I was probably never going to get for his backstory. I just kind of settled with myself and said, you know what? He's not Reddington. He's not Liz. They'll give us glossed over background, and I'm just going to have to be happy with my headcanons. But no, we got an entire season of a spinoff for Tom Keen's history, and that is just the best gift that the writers could have given to me. I very much enjoyed it, and I believe that it's really going to make moving forward very interesting, because as Tom said in early season 4, he said as a father that he's starting to question what about his own father and his own biological family. And so these are questions that he's going to have, much like Liz in early season 4 when she came across Kirk, and in late season 4 with finding out about Reddington, she's questioning how all of that works in for her, and he's having to do the same meeting his biological family and where that takes him as he is now and who he wants to become. And it's very fascinating to me, and I loved what they did to it. I'm sad to see it go, but I'm also very excited to see how they work it into the main show and see Tom back on the main show, because I have to admit, I got very spoiled with him in Redemption being on the screen so much. And while the last bit of season 4 was just nonstop and absolutely fantastic, I still did miss him several episodes into that last arc. I was really starting to miss him. And so I'll be happy to see him back in. I believe that the way they brought him back in was better than I could have ever expected. It was just perfect.
How about you, Evie?
I'm pretty much going to be echoing everything that Tessa and Jen just said. There could be no greater gift than more crazy mythology and nutso spy parents and just being able to flesh out Tom's character, who has been a favorite from me since season 1, which was a very unpopular position to have in season 1, but I stayed with it, and I've not been disappointed. So I got more Tom time, more crazy mythology, and as a very pleasant surprise, I love the way Tom and Solomon's relationship is the funniest thing I've seen ever. I love the scene where they were working together and he was pretending to be the plumber inside.
Oh,
that was amazing. I that's got to be one of my favorite things that I've seen this season. They were so great together. So,
the plumber scene.
That was definitely a fan favorite.
Top notch. The flight attendant scenes. Those were good too.
With the plumber,
those were cute too.
Oh, and Solomon reciting Moby Dick. That was, you know, it was just, I mean, overall it was just great when Scotty has to torture Tom. I'm sure that all of that is going to somewhat be reflected in the mythology of the Blacklist.
Yeah,
I'm always glad to see more Tom, because I love Tom and Red together.
Which is interesting when you think about it from the whole universe of the Blacklist, because Red was the one that hired Tom originally via the Major. And then they have this like weird thing between them. I love the one, I think it was a mid-season finale or late season finale where he was like yelling at Red and said, "Oh, are you just pissed off because I didn't ask Daddy's permission?" And you're sitting there going like, "Well, is he talking about like is Red his dad? Is Red Liz's dad? What does he mean by that statement?" So I find it interesting what their relationship's going to become, because at this point Kaplan obviously used Tom to put her plan into motion, so now Tom is on the opposite sides of Red again. And is Tom really on the side of Liz at the end of the day, or is he going to be kind of an independent contractor for this upcoming season?
I have a lot of high hopes for a very Dom and Red sort of relationship in times to come. Obviously, it wouldn't be nearly, you know, within probably even when the show shows us, unless they do a huge jump at the end. But I could see them working towards that sort of relationship by the end of it. Tom is one of the few people right now that could have taken that suitcase, and I'm not going to say he has a pass with it, but he is Liz's husband. He's the man that Liz loves. Red's not going to shoot him in the face over it. It's Red made the comment in season 4. He said, you know, I'm not going to betray him like other employers might, because I genuinely care for him, or rather you and Agnes. And, you know, I really enjoyed that moment, because I think he has, in his own way, and not as in, like, Tom is his best friend, or that he would choose to go spend an afternoon with Tom Keene if he had a choice, but in his own way, I think Red has finally sort of warmed up to Tom as much as he can. It's an exception that neither of those men are going anywhere. They have both accepted that neither of them are leaving Liz's life, and they coexist.
Very parallel to the Alexander Kirk relationship.
Which way?
Yeah.
I'm not seeing that one either.
Well, no. Well, just the fact that he let Kirk live, right? If the Hobson's choice was Kirk, you know, and doing that in order to, for Katarina's sake, because of the baby, he's doing the kind of the same concept with Tom. Like, I'm not going to kill you just because you mean so much to Liz and Agnes at this point. So very similar
to a
concept.
To a degree, I really do see it more as a Dom and Red early years relationship. That there's a sort of mutual respect in a way between them. They may not always like each other, but there is a definite respect that we've seen played out through canon. Whenever Red needs something done in a timely manner where there's really very little room for error, he calls Tom. That's the person that he calls. And I think it really, and the fact that Tom leaned on Red's word about Scotty as much as he did, moving from season 4 into Redemption, that he refused to go to Scotty and tell her who he was, because every time someone, especially Liz kept coming to him saying, why don't you go to your mother? Maybe your mother can answer this question. Surely you can ask your mother. And he kept over and over again, Reddington said, I can't trust her. He kept relying on that. Even if they don't always like each other, there is a mutual respect there.
From the episode when he went to go get him and Tom Keene, Red does something he almost never does. He compares, he puts Tom on his level. And he says, you know, this is the person that he's going to reach out to. And and Wrestler goes, how do you know that? Red goes, it's because it's who I would reach out to. Unfortunately, Tom and I share some propensities. And he calls him an extremely gifted covert operative. His problems with Tom have nothing to do with his respect for his abilities as an operative, or his ability to kind of play in this world, play on his level. So,
which might just be the kind of person that he needs now that he's illiquid, because yeah. He said because we're given the line that says, yes, the suitcase is exactly where Kaplan said it would be, but do we really know that? That's actually coming from a Kaplan supporter, or could it be coming from Red? Who is Tom really going to take that suitcase to? Which I think sets up a really interesting dynamic for where Tom's loyalties lie in season 5.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very, very interesting season, because you have that. You have Red basically illiquid, which makes him rely on the FBI, which only goes so far. Because there are things that they're not going to be stealing things. They're not going to be, well, they did, but not that much. And I think Red has to rely now on family, and Tom became family. The moment that Agnes was born, Red's objections, which, you know, at that point in time, we had no idea who Katarina really was. We only knew she was a spy. It's only afterwards that we have seen that Katarina really was an undercover operative that entered Red Life, that seduced him, that used him, that we've seen that though a lot of those objections may have been from his own experience, which is something that I sort of saw from the very beginning, that when he was speaking to Liz about Tom, there was something very deeply personal that went past just, you know, you're my daughter and I hate you going through this. It felt like it was something he had lived, that he had been targeted, that he had suffered lies, that he wasn't sure whether she really loved him or it was an assignment. So I think that Tom the dynamic between Tom and Red is going to be fundamental in moving this show forward, because it is, I think that now Red, stripped of everything, has to go back to basics. And to go back to basics means, to me, going back to Katarina. I think that a lot of what Red has says is about the truth and about examining and not understanding. It reflects him going from your mother died of weakness and shame to I'm not sure why she disappeared. And I think that he had been evaluating that maybe he judged her too harshly.
I agree. Going forward, I think Red is going to have to be relying on Tom, and that will bring back all those Tom Katarina parallels, because that's been something that three of us have been talking about for forever. That when he looks at Tom, he's not just seeing Tom, he's seeing what happened to him and Katarina could potentially be happening again. So he's always known that Tom is strong and capable. He's known since season two that Tom loves Liz more than anything, or else he wouldn't have been so content in just leaving him in Germany and being certain that he was going to fly back to save Liz. He knew that Tom loved her, absolutely. So I think Red's big problem is because he saw what happened when he got into his relationship with Katarina. She honey trapped him. And then obviously at some point, even after the honey trap, they got back together, and then it ended in terrible, terrible disaster. So this is where Red's getting his warnings about Tom, about people like him can't change. So I don't think it's so much that he believes that Tom's going to deliberately try to hurt her, but simply like Katarina, he won't be able to escape that part of himself, and it's going to bring ruin and destruction on Liz and on Agnes. But I'm hoping going forward in this season, because he's illiquid, he's going to have to rely on Tom and get to a place where he's going to work past his Katarina issues. I'm hoping for an Anslow Garrick-like scene where they're stuck together and they have to just talk it out in like a box and just let things just explode between them so that they can sort of clear the air, and also hopefully clear up some things about the Angel Station Hotel and what the heck happened in the season one finale that I really want to do. Please.
Well, as we wrap things up here, maybe some quick questions. Let's just go around the horn. So the first one is, what do you think Red said to Alexander Kirk when he whispered sweet nothings in his ear?
My view is that he's bringing up the information that he has that Katarina may in fact be alive. I don't think anything apart from that would stop Kirk from killing him, because clearly he values Red dying more than he values his own life, and more than he values the good opinion of Liz, who had begged him to stop and who was his, you know, daughter for all intents and purposes for several years. So the one thing that he's talking about and the conversation that they're having is about Katarina and how much Kirk still loves Katarina. Crazy devotion there. So my money is there's evidence that Katarina may in fact be alive.
I fully agree with Evie there that I can't, personally, I cannot see another scenario. I was very against the idea of Red believing Katarina was alive up until that point, just because he'd straight up told Liz, your mother is dead. And I, in most cases, I can find a way around the out and out lie with him, except with Katarina. That's kind of my hang up on the Red doesn't lie, but I can't see another scenario there that could have stayed Kirk's hand. I just can't see another one. So that's what I believe he said. It could be something that's just not on my radar yet. But as far as I can tell, that's the best guess I have for that.
I think that he told Kirk was basing everything in that he had a happy life, and that Red was the interloper who seduced Katarina and stole his child, and his life was over. And I think that what Red told Rostov was, no, Palsy, I was married to Katarina, and you got into my happy marriage. And that was enough, because I would have taken his entire force of revenge and render him the bad guy.
That's an interesting thought. I don't know if it would stop him in his tracks when he's got the needle in his throat, but it is possible. Flip the tables. Very, very good possibility. So when we come back now in season 5, which characters' stories that's not Liz, Red, or Tom are you most excited about seeing moving forward? Let's go ahead and start with Jen.
wrestler. I just, hands down, I seriously want to just wrap that man in a warm blanket and protect him in the finale. I'm both very excited and very terrified at the same time, because I know what sort of anguish this is going to bring him, because he's a good man. He's the Boy Scout. And yes, this was an accident. It was a horrible accident. He also took the steps needed to cover it up. He took his steps into the gray in season four's finale, which he needs to, because otherwise he's not going to be able to survive continuously in a black and white sort of view that he likes to take in this world. He needed to get a little deeper into the gray, and he did, but I know how much that's going to hurt him. So I'm very fascinated to see where he's going and how all that pans out.
I agree. I mean, I have to say wrestler. I would be interested to hear about Cooper, because we haven't seen a lot of Cooper lately in terms of character development, but definitely wrestler. I mean, he was put in more or less a very similar position to Red. Now we're going to see what is the aftermath of all that.
Yeah, I'm wrestler as well. I'm interested in the soul searching that's going to be happening, because of all the characters in the show, wrestler's the greatest zealot in his beliefs and in what he believes needs to happen in terms of the law and following the letter of the law. So I wasn't thrilled that this was how we ended the season for him, because I kind of wanted to have a nice win for wrestler, but it does put him in an interesting moral place. And I'm hoping that this is going to lead us to a Tommy Markin episode. I don't know, that could be a totally fruitless hope, but I'm hoping that he's going to be going on a little soul-searching mission and possibly going to confront the man who killed his father, and that would be very exciting for me.
And see, I want more of the wrestler story too, but I don't think wrestler is this good Boy Scout that we always think he is. I mean, you have to remember, he had the addiction problem. He spent all this time chasing Reddington. I mean, he literally could have been Julian Gale in a lot of ways had the post office not come to his rescue to break him out of that, you know, obsession, if you will. I mean, he was very obsessed with Red in the first season up until the point of Ansel Garrick, where they finally kind of bonded and understood each other. But I think you talk about, you know, attacking the gnome and the anger issues that he has and things of that nature. There's a lot of darkness in him. Remember, he was going to disembowel, you know, Tanita in that episode. I mean, he was that close to just taking him out on his own accord. So
you mean Janica?
Or Janica, yeah, Janica in the Mako Tanita, right? But But he was close enough to doing it that I think that given the right buttons being pushed, he actually would have done it. So
he was going to kill Solomon as well.
Right, right. So I mean, really, when you think about it, there's some dark tendencies there. So is this really that unexpected? It's really the question of how does he move forward from it, I think, is where we get the really interesting story to say this has really been there all along and Gale really brought it back out of him, or he really is the Boy Scout and this is how he redeems himself. So I think that'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. Well, cool. Any final thoughts you guys have? Season 5, what are the big stories you want revealed? Are you guys excited it's 22 episodes again? Do you wish it was 16 or 8 or 13 or... I mean, 22 is a lot, especially for us that cover the show, right?
I'm excited too. I think that we're going to get one season to two seasons more. That's it. I'm getting the feel by how many threads are being picked up that we are approaching the end. And so I think that we're going to see a lot of Dom, which gets me very excited because I love that character. And I think we're going to start seeing all this family drama, because I think the Blacklist at the end is just a little family drama just played in spies and with millions of dollars and people killed when they want to leave a little message to one another. But I'm super excited to see Dom Red reconstructing his empire. I want to see how it goes forward now that Liz knows who it's her father. What's going to happen to the post office now, knowing that, is she going to tell them? What's going to happen with Wrestler? You have this conflicting dynamics all around. It's like everything is new again.
I'm never sorry that it's 22 episodes versus less episodes. Never say give me less episodes of Blacklist. I really, that would never be an acceptable choice. So like Tessa, I'm getting really excited because I also feel that getting into the last season, maybe two seasons left. So they're going to be able to really start dropping some mythology stuff on us. So I'm obviously really excited to see how they end up wrapping up Tom's redemption mythology. And then also the secret of what's inside the suitcase. That's very exciting for me. I've noticed that we've started to do like a flashback episode a season or a semi-flashback episode a season. We had Kate May in season 3. We had Requiem this past season. So what I really, really want is a flashback episode that they're going to dedicate, obviously it would be toward the end of the season, probably toward the end of the series, about Reddington and Katarina's relationship, because anytime I see Katarina, I get really, really excited. She's awesome. Mm. And of course, I'm also looking forward to seeing Red rebuild his empire with Liz at his side. I want to see them commit fun crimes together, not like crimes, but like fun, capery sort of things as some father-daughter bonding time. I think that would be, you know, because it got very dark this last season in The Blacklist, which not to say it wasn't a good season, but like Liz, and when they were in the car together and she finds out about Kaplan, she's going, oh gosh, just can't it just be over? Can it be over? I want the sadness to lighten up a little. So, and just go back to having a little fun, crazy blacklist good time of Red just laughing and giving people smoothie or giving people grape slushies, et cetera, et cetera.
Eating brats in the woods with a glass of wine.
Exactly. You know, the fun stuff.
Okay, maybe not drunk Red. Red was pretty slosh the entire episode.
We love drunk Red.
Oh, I will never, ever complain about more Blacklist. As long as they are handing me fantastic canon and mythology and great character development, I'm going to be all over that. I'm hoping to, honestly, I'd like to see Katarina back. I still am of the opinion that she's alive, and I would like to see her back sooner rather than later, preferably, because I've been on the edge of my seat for far too long waiting for it. I hope that I don't wait for it straight into the show. And I'm also very curious about what sort of way they're going to wrap the Halcyon storyline into the main show. Because the writers are very good. The showrunners are very good. I have full faith in them that they had a backup plan for Redemption if it didn't get picked up for a second season. And so I fully expect to see a much more slimmed down version of what they would have done in Redemption, just threaded in to what they're doing for season 5. And obviously looking forward to Red and Liz. I really don't have much to add onto that, but Tessa and Evie said, because I mean, everybody wants more Red and Liz, I think. I mean, otherwise, why would we be watching the show? But I'd also am very excited to see where they take Samar and Aram. I am a big fan of those two. I ship Saram. And I was a little worried that they made them so angry at each other that I wouldn't be okay when they came together. But I'm very much looking forward to seeing how they build that up, because they did do a lot of damage to it in season 4. So I'm curious to see how they build from where they ended it.
Love it.
And the bones.
The bones.
Well, always the bones. Who's yeah. Bones, I mean, I don't expect them to just drop the bones.
No.
As long as we don't go to like New Orleans or something and some voodoo magic happens. Like, read the bones. Tell us the future. Is he the father or not?
I think everybody's expecting that the DNA is going to say, oh, that's the father. I don't know. I think that is, you know, I have a feeling that whose bones are they? And that's a crazier theory than Carly's Katarina. Because I do believe in the third man, in the third father.
Interesting. Cool. Well, thanks guys so much for being there. Go around the home one more time. Evie, where can people find you?
They can find me on Tumblr as Blacklister214. They can also find me on fanfiction.net if you enjoy fanfiction of Keen 2 variety as Evie Edge.
And Tessa?
They can find me on Tumblr. And blog is called Criminally Sane and is Tessa BL Theorist. And I'm also active in Tumblr during the season. And I'm love Reddit.
Yeah, the Reddit Blacklist group is awesome. A lot of good fun people over there. How about you, Jen?
I'm over on Tumblr as Takata Saiko, and I'm also on fanfiction.net and Archive of Our Own as Takata Saiko as well. I do quite a bit of Keen Squared fanfiction as well.
Well, fantastic. Thanks so much, guys, for being on. Again, you can catch The Blacklist when it returns Wednesday nights. That's Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, 7 Central in the States on NBC. Again, we're a week later, premiering on October the 4th. So a couple more weeks to hold out. Still got time to rewatch any episodes you want. If you didn't get a chance to check out Blacklist Redemption, you can do that. I believe it's on Hulu, all 8 episodes. So now would be a great time to catch that series and just have some Blacklist to watch while we wait for October 4th to come. And of course, don't forget podcast awards. You can go ahead and nominate The Blacklist in the entertainment category. That's at podcastawards.com. Just hit the blue box up at the top of the screen, and that'll take you into the nomination ballot. You do have to provide your email address and confirm your email address. But again, they won't spam you or anything. They'll just send you the one confirmation email. Go ahead and make sure you confirm your vote. So that's, again, The Blacklist Exposed in the entertainment category. And then also do us a good favor and vote for Beyond Westworld over in the TV and film category, as well as you support our good podcast here at Golden Spiral Media. Until then, we'll be back soon. So thanks so much for listening. Take care, all. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.